For those of you who are not familiar with Ian's work, let me just give you a quick introduction. Ian Watson is the co-founder of the Lakeland College, which he co-founded in 1993. He's also an internationally known lecturer. He does workshops in the field of homeopathy and self-development all over the world. He's also the author of a number of different books. One is called A Guide to the Methodologies of Homeopathy. Another one is entitled The Tao of Homeopathy. And a third one is entitled Musculoskeletal Problems. He also has over 20 recorded seminars that are available in CD and also MP3 format. If you want more information about those happen to be quite one of the most popular products that we saw on the Whole Health Now website. And if you want more information about those audio recorded seminars, you can call toll-free 866-599-5950. That's 866-599-5950. Or you can visit the Whole Health Now website, Whole Health Now, W-H-O-L-E, health, H-E-A-L-T-H-N-O-W, .com/books. And there's, as I said, there's over 20 recorded seminars that he's available on CD through the website. In more recent years, Ian has been doing some extensive study, especially in the work of Carl Jung, Joseph Campbell, R.D. Lang, Milton Erickson, Marion Woodman, and Arnold Mundell, and also other pioneers in the realm of spiritual and psychological health. And hopefully he can share a little bit more about his experiences doing those studies. Currently, Ian lives in Devon, England, with his wife and his daughter, and we're very thankful to have him join us this morning. So thank you again, Ian.
Thanks, Kim. It's nice to be here.
Okay. So you had suggested the title of the call as the Tao of Homeopathy, and I thought for maybe people on the call who weren't familiar with that concept or term, you could just define for us what is the Tao of Homeopathy.
Okay, I'll try. I think it can be a number of different things, and maybe I'll mention a few possibilities. For me, first of all, really it's a way of shifting our perception and our understanding so that we can think a little bit more holistically, we can be a bit more flexible, increase the choices that are available to us as practitioners. And also, for me, one important part of it is about being able to practice in a way that suits our intrinsic nature, our individual nature, irrespective of whether anyone else has practiced that way. So you could say it's a way of harmonizing our inner life with our homeopathic study and practice. It could also be a bringing together of the ancient Chinese wisdom called Taoism, which it goes back at least 2,500 years that we know of, and kind of bringing that together with the Western consciousness that gave birth to homeopathy, kind of blending of the East and West. It can also be a way of transforming our homeopathic work so that it becomes a practice in itself. It's not just about learning tools and techniques anymore to help other people, but seeing our homeopathy work as a kind of training ground for our own spiritual growth and inner growth. That, to me, is probably the most interesting aspect. And there's also a little book called The Tao of Homeopathy, so I guess it could be that too.
Very interesting. Ian, how did you become interested in the relationship between homeopathy and Taoism?
Well, it was a kind of roundabout route in a way. I would think probably the starting point was my involvement with teaching at various colleges and then giving my own seminars, then working in the Lakeland College for over a number of years. And that got me interested in, first of all, what motivates people to study homeopathy in the first place, what it is that students and practitioners typically struggle with, what kinds of things get in the way of successful practice. For example, I was amazed how many people trained in homeopathy who then never really practiced it for various reasons, and I kind of wondered why this was. Around that time, I came across one of Tim Galway's books, which was, I think it was The Inner Game of Music. And he wrote or co-authored a series. Sorry?
Ian, could you spell the author's last name for everybody?
Galway, I think it's G-A-L-W-A-Y, if I remember correctly.
Okay, great, thanks.
Tim Galway. And his first book, I think, was The Inner Game of Music. And then there was The Inner Game of Tennis and a few others. And the basic premise of this that I was studying was the difference between learning a skill and being able to apply that skill consistently in whatever field it was. And he was examining what is it that gets in the way of a person's performance, as it were. And he had this notion of this thing called interference, which is obviously an internal interference. The premise being that when you're in an optimal inner state, then your performance will always be better than it otherwise would. And I developed some materials around that time, which I call the inner game of homeopathy, basically applying this idea. And around the same time, I was getting interested in Taoism. I was reading the Tao Te Ching, and I also came across Fritjof Capra's book, The Tao of Physics. And that really opened up my eyes to how these very old ideas were actually very relevant to modern fields such as physics. And I began to see some overlap with what I'd already understood. The idea being it's not so much what we do, but how we do it. And even more importantly, you could say it's the place within ourselves that we do it from that really makes a difference. Things like the intention that we bring to our work, the kind of consciousness and spirit that we bring to it. These things are somewhat hidden and seemingly subtle, and yet they determine a great deal of what happens on the outside. So I figured if this was true in a field such as physics or music or tennis, well, the chances are there was something here that homeopaths could learn from.
Ian, you know, a lot of people probably are not that familiar with Taoism who are on the call, you know, being homeopaths and everything, and so they may not necessarily see what is the direct relationship between Taoism and homeopathy, and I thought perhaps you could just kind of share a little bit about what you see these two fields having in common with each other.
Yeah, the nice thing is there's a natural fit, really. When you start to study one and then you start to look at the other, there's quite a few things that they have in common. For a start, they're both essentially paradoxical. That's one of the striking things. The idea that little things make a big difference, for example, you find in both. In homeopathy, we have this peculiarity where the most potent remedies are the ones that contain the least. The most virulent poisons make some of the best medicines. This kind of idea was known to the ancient Chinese. They talk about the journey of 1,000 miles beginning with the first step. The implication being that one step will change the whole journey, and of course it does. So I started to see there's areas like this where there's quite a parallel. The other thing that I liked about Taoism as a philosophy is that it's based on observation of natural phenomena, as my understanding of homeopathy is too. So the goal is really to follow nature rather than to impose something on nature. There's that recognition that we can't really improve on the natural world. The best we can do is align ourselves with it, with the way that it's going. Another thing they have in common would be the acknowledgement that there's this invisible realm, which is the kind of template for the visible, tangible world, and that we do and can interact with this realm in various ways. You know, what homeopaths would talk about as the spirit-like vital force. In Taoism, they talk about the Tao, which means simply the way that things naturally are. But often we lose touch with the way that things naturally are. We have our own ideas. And it points us back to that place, and I think homeopathy is pointing in the same direction.
Ian, you've obviously been involved in Taoist practices for a while, is that correct?
Yeah.
How many years have you been involved in these practices?
Well, I've studied it as a philosophy for about, I would say, 16 years now.
So quite a long time.
And as a result of that, it's kind of opened my eyes to various of the different arts, if you like, that came out of that system, which include some of the martial arts like Tai Chi and Qigong, but also the Chinese medical philosophy. All of that is rooted in the Taoist philosophy.
So Ian, I'm curious, you've had quite a bit of experience with these Taoist philosophies and various practices. What have you found that this has brought to your practice of homeopathy, and what do you think that involving anybody's involvement in these various types of practices could do to their success of homeopathy?
I think one of the things that it's very helpful with is that it concentrates the mind of the practitioner on the process of healing rather than on the content of the particular subject. So in that sense, it's a good counterbalance to the current trend within homeopathy, which is to learn more and more stuff, you know, whether it's more new remedies or methodologies or more books, bigger and better repertory programs and so on. There is that almost psychotic element within homeopathy that it keeps getting bigger. And one of the things I noticed was that you can easily get overwhelmed in all of that and get lost in the number of things that we're expected to learn. So the first thing it does, it kind of simplifies things. It points us back to the underlying unity behind the apparent complexity on the surface, whether that's looking at an individual case or looking at the whole subject. So for me, it helps to restore that essential simplicity and trust that many of us have when we first discover homeopathy. You know, it's a simple thing when we first pick it up. My experience was it was relatively simple. I just knew a few remedies, and everybody I met seemed to need one of those remedies or the other, and I would just give one. If it didn't work, I'd give another. There wasn't much complexity to it. And then the more we learn, in a way, the more difficult it seems to get. And what I liked about the Taoist approach was that it takes you back, it encourages you to go back to that, you could say in the Zen tradition, they call the place of the beginner's mind, where you see things more clearly as they are. Another thing I like that I think is helpful is that Taoism doesn't really have a moral code as such. That it doesn't say this is good and that's bad, this is right, this is wrong. It's concerned with what works and with what's appropriate to the moment, for whether it's for an individual or for the greater whole. The implication being that what's right in one situation could well be wrong in a different one. So it requires a certain fluidity and a sort of relentless focus on what are the needs of this individual in this moment. And I like that. It prevents me from getting stuck in any particular idea of what I think should be happening or what I think I should be doing. And there are also those tendencies within homeopathy for us to dogmatize and to crystallize and to try and fix the principles as if they could be fixed, you know, for all people and all time. And Taoism says, well, no, the individual overrules all of that in some sense, and we've got to trust that there's an underlying pattern to every individual that we're working with, and if we can discern that, then we can work with that individual in a fresh way without worrying about whether someone else would do something similar.
Interesting. Ian, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. I mean, you know, as I know you are very well aware, there's a very large corpus of philosophical information already associated with homeopathy. So the question is, since we've got this huge body of existing homeopathic philosophical information, is it really necessary or even beneficial to add on another philosophy like Taoism to our practice of homeopathy?
Well, it's a good question, and I myself am as guilty as anyone of adding to the body of knowledge, but fortunately, Taoism is not really about learning anything, I don't think. It's mostly about unlearning and relinquishing and letting go of whatever has been, if you like, getting in the way. So some of the things that we learn complicate things. And in the Taoist tradition, they have this kind of saying that if you have a muddy pool, you can't clear it by stirring it with something. You know, anything you add is going to make it even muddier. And in that sense, there's nothing you can do to make it clear. What's required is you step back and you allow that mud to settle, which means you let your own mud settle. And by doing so, you discover there's a way that nature takes care of these things and everything else as well. So for me, it's a helpful philosophy because it helps us to see how we get in our own way, how we create complexity where there actually could be simplicity. How we muddy our own pond, as it were, and it helps us stop doing that.
You know, Ian, a lot of the people on the call, I'm sure this morning, are actual homeopathic practitioners, and I'm sure they would be interested to find out how incorporating Taoism, for example, might help them with some of their more difficult or confused cases. Do you have any ideas or thoughts on how this might be of assistance?
Yeah. The first way it can help with casework, for example, would be by reminding us where the problem really lies, and it's not usually the first place that we look. In homeopathy, as in life, when we're struggling with something like a difficult case, we generally would tend to assume the difficulty's out there somewhere. We would say, you know, this patient is difficult, or this case has become confused. Or we say homeopathy itself is too difficult. And at that point, we either think we should give up and do something else, or we try to work harder, or we try to learn something new or something different that we think is going to help. All of that can lead to kind of muddying the pond. And what we're forgetting is that the difficulty or the confusion is ours. And this is what I really learned from the inner game work from Tim Galway, and this, it was echoed in the Taoist philosophy, is that when we experience confusion in the outer world, that's a reflection of something that's happening inside for us. The outer world is in harmony. It's just that we can't see it at that moment. It's what's known in psychology as a projection. We project our own inner fears, anxieties, confusions, and other problems onto our patients or onto homeopathy itself. So when I say this case is difficult, what I'm really saying is I'm struggling. You know, I'm struggling to see the wood for the trees here. I've lost that clarity within myself, that place of stillness from which life seems relatively simple. So for me, what it does, it helps me to bring me back to that place where, oh yeah, I can see the simplicity again, and that possibility always exists. The proof of that being, for me, I can have a case that looks completely messed up and mixed up and I don't know what to do, and I could show that to a colleague and they just look at it from their perspective. It's not complex at all. They can just cut right through the confusion and see what it see it as it is. That's the beginner's mind idea again. And one of the things I learned was sometimes it's more helpful to show a case. If I'm confused with a person I'm working with, I found it could be more helpful to take that case to a first or second year student rather than someone who knows more or has more experience. Oftentimes it was someone who had less clutter, as it were, who could see. They say, well, you haven't even given arnica, you know. And I'm thinking about what's the miasm and what's the organ remedies and all the psychological stuff, and what that person sees is a clear etiology right there. I just couldn't see it. So, you know, beginners can often do that in the way experienced practitioners can.
Amazing phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the beginner's mind, you know. But the potential exists that we can access that. It's just a shift in perception. But it requires us to look in the right place. We have to stop looking out there and trying to fix it out there and kind of turn the mirror back.
Very interesting. Ian, I don't remember if it was on our last call or in a private conversation, but I remember you mentioning something to the effect of something about your Taoist practices being really helpful in terms of attracting clients and building up a practice. And I don't remember exactly the context, but could you elaborate a little bit on that particular issue?
Yeah, this is an area where I think it's really helpful because, as I said earlier, a lot of people do study for years, but they find themselves either unable to make a living from homeopathy, or they find that the way that they're practicing doesn't quite come together, or variations on that. And it's not for a lack of knowledge or training or skill or any of the apparent external things. Normally those things have been covered adequately enough. And what that says to me, it's about our internal relationship to ourselves and to the work. And my basic assumption that I've learned from Taoism is that when I'm in alignment with myself and with whatever it is that I'm here to do and be, then somehow the universe supports me. You know, this is a kind of core theme, I think, of Taoist understanding. It reminds me of what Joseph Campbell called following your bliss. This is about finding your own path and having the courage to follow it. So one thing that I notice is that a lot of us in homeopathy, we try and follow someone else's bliss, at least initially, and we wonder why that's a struggle. You know, in other words, we try to replicate another person's way of doing homeopathy. I know I did that in the beginning years. I had some good teachers who were my role models, and I started off practicing in the style that had been modeled to me. and it worked for me for a while. And then I realized that it wasn't quite me, and I had to somehow shake that off. It started to feel like hard work. And the strange thing is, when you watch the teacher demonstrating, it looks easy and fluid and effortless, you know, and it is for them. And then when you try and replicate it in your own practice, suddenly it's a struggle, and you think, well, maybe I haven't learnt enough. And, you know, you go back to another seminar and get a bit more, but it doesn't do it. And to me, that's a key part of this, is recognizing the need to be authentic to oneself. And when you are, I would say the universe supports you. The practice flourishes when you're in alignment in that way. So that's one thing that the Taoist approach can help. But there's another scenario I've seen many times. Could be a person, say a student, who learns homeopathy. They can happily prescribe for family, friends, colleagues at work. They get good results, going fine. And then they graduate from college, and suddenly they start to feel this pressure of being a practitioner. You know, they're moving away from being a student, and now the reality of being a practitioner starts to dawn on that individual. Now they have to charge people. They have to take money for what they're doing, and it starts to fall apart. I've seen this many, many times. And what's happening here, this person's getting caught up in either the sense of responsibility that comes with treating people professionally, or it starts to feel like a burden that they have to get it right now. Whereas before, you know, like I said, you try something, it doesn't work, you try something else. Now that person's paying you $50 or whatever, it matters more whether you get it right or not, or it seems to. And this is something internal that's changed. Not much has changed on the outside. You're using the same skills, you're doing the same techniques, but that inner relationship to it has changed, and it can be paralyzing. So this is an area where it just helps to regain that perspective and to shift your relationship to the practice so that you can be comfortable with it again.
Very interesting. Ian, you know, there might be some people on the call, I forgot to mention this, that may not even be familiar with what Taoism is. So I was hoping that perhaps you could just give us a little bit of a background, a historical background, or kind of a definition of what is Taoism. And I think probably most people do understand that it's a type of spiritual philosophy. And, you know, this is a question I've asked actually other teachers and different practitioners at various times, which is, you know, since Taoism is largely a spiritual philosophy, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that, and homeopathy is a system of medicine which is designed to treat sick people, there's oftentimes this question about how much does homeopathy actually involve itself in spiritual processes or spiritual evolution. And so this is a two-part question. One is, could you just give us a little bit of a sense of what actually Taoism is historically, and just maybe a little bit of an idea of the philosophy of it, and then since it is a kind of a spiritual philosophy, how does that relate to homeopathy? Do you see that there is a spiritual component to homeopathic practice or study?
Okay.
Sorry for the
first
question.
I'll give the enigmatic answer, which which is quoting literally from the Tao Te Ching, which is the classic Taoist text, which would be, the Tao that can be told is not the Tao. And my understanding of that basic notion is that Taoism, really, what it seems to be designed to do is to take us to, you could say, to the point which is beyond duality, which is beyond the normal duality that we experience in our daily life. And in the world of everyday forms, we experience everything in duality. It's either black or white, hot or cold, male or female. This is how we seem to experience the physical world, but also psychologically. We think dualistically. We like this and we don't like that. This we think is good, this we think is bad. And it seems most of the spiritual traditions point to this same place. Buddhism is the same, talking about going beyond the pairs of opposites and recognizing that there's a place where what seem like separate things are brought together, the unity of opposites. And Taoism is another way of approaching this conundrum, that somewhere there is a unity which we cannot see and which we don't experience, but it's there. And it's a way of reminding ourselves that it's there. And the way that Taoism chooses to do that is to say, look at nature, look at the unity that exists in nature, and notice, for example, that nothing is entirely bad. That's one of the things that I've learned from Taoism, is to see that if you look at something that looks bad and you're able to change your perspective, you'll see the same thing and it looks good, you know? And I would say, I mean, it is a spiritual philosophy in a way, but for me, it's actually a practical philosophy. And in that sense, it's designed to improve your experience of life, to restore a sense of ease and peace and a flow in life where there might have been a sense of conflict or difficulty or confusion. So in that sense, it's quite practical, and it doesn't require any particular practices, although there are practices that are based upon it. It's more just simply a way of looking at an experience in the world. And I think to go on to the second part of your question, is there this kind of, are we right to have this spiritual association with homeopathy? Well, it seems we have it, whether we like it or not. And it's, for me, it's always been one of homeopathy's attractions. Whether we're conscious of it or not, I think a lot of people are drawn to homeopathy because it has those kind of mystical spiritual associations. Hahnemann, we know, was a Freemason. He was influenced by Paracelsus, the alchemists. He alluded to this higher purpose of our existence in the Organon. So, you know, he was planting those seeds. Kent and his contemporaries were inspired by Swedenborg, Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a mystic. This is part of the tradition we've inherited. Interestingly, I've taught homeopathy groups in Egypt for many years in Cairo, and I've stayed with a family there who've become good friends. They're all Sufis, and they will always take good care of me. And they've had literally dozens of homeopaths pass through their house from different parts of the world over the years. And they've told me that every single one of those homeopaths had a kind of spiritual outlook on life, as well as an interest in homeopathy. It's something that they noticed, you know, that somehow these people all brought something to the work which was above and beyond, you could say, the everyday, you know, just learning to give remedies or just to make people better. So for me, it goes with the terrain. I think one of the problems, potentially, is that homeopathy has been perhaps overly concerned to gain some kind of respectability and acceptance. And its association with spirituality has probably been seen as a liability, you know, something that puts people off. And it's certainly in recent decades, homeopathy has tried to present itself as something that's altogether scientific and rational, and you know, we can demonstrate and prove, and we can do clinical trials, and it's like this presenting itself as an objective science. And I wonder about that. I see there's a danger here that the baby's been thrown out with the bathwater, because this connection with spirituality is a primary reason that many of us are drawn to it in the first place. And I suppose I should qualify that by saying it's important that we don't confuse spirituality with religion or with dogmatism. You know, as soon as we say, in order to be a good homeopath, you have to believe in this or that, well, we're finished, and it becomes another dogma. And that's why I like Taoism as a philosophy, and as a nice fit with homeopathic philosophy, because it's not based on a moral code or an ethical code, as most religions are. Its assumption is that nature knows best, including our own nature. And I think that assumption is implicit in homeopathy too. So, in a sense, they're pointing to the same place, and that place is a recognition that there is this connecting thread, not just between human beings, but between all phenomena. And if that doorway is open to people through the study of homeopathy, well, what a great thing it's opened them to.
Fantastic. Ian, you know, I'm sure that some of the people on the call today or people who are listening to the recorded session at a later time might be interested in finding out how they could learn more about Taoism, either, you know, through books or through programs, courses. Do you have any suggestions on how somebody might proceed to learn more about the Taoist practices?
Yeah, I think the basic text is the best place to start if you haven't read anything, and that's the Tao Te Ching, which has been translated many, many times. I've got a a favorite, probably two favorite translations. One which I've had for a long time, which has beautiful illustrations by a woman called Jane English, and I actually forget the name of the translator. I think it's a Chinese author with illustrations by Jane English. There's another one, more modern, recent translation by Stephen Mitchell, which I really like. It's very poetic and very succinct. And it's, you know, a bit like my Tao of Homeopathy book. You pick it up and you can run through it in no time. You think, well, this is a quick read. But then you suddenly realize that just one of those paragraphs, you might have to sit and chew on that for a few days. So it can kind of stop you in your tracks. But I would just start with the Tao Te Ching. From that point, follow your own interest. There's lots of Tao of books have been written, like the Tao of Physics I mentioned. There's the Tao of Pooh, as in Winnie the Pooh, which is a fabulous little book, and the corresponding one, the Day of Piglet. These ones are are very good, very accessible. There's the Tao of Leadership. I like that one too, if you're interested in how this applies to, for example, working in an organization, or, you know, if you're responsible for a team of people. That one has been a big help to me. But there's lots. I mean, there's literally hundreds of titles.
And what about programs or classes that people could participate in? Are you, do you have any recommendations in that area?
I really don't know. I don't know. For me, it's just been a study through the literature and then through getting interested in the Taoist arts, specifically the Qigong and the Chinese medicine aspects. So I don't know. There probably is a lot of stuff now web-based that you can access.
Sure.
And of course, the I Ching also came out of this understanding. So the I Ching is an oracle for, not really for predicting the future. What its function is to show you what exists in the present that you can't see. And it will do that very accurately. Carl Jung made a big study of the I Ching in the 1930s, 40s. He was introduced to it by the translator, the first translator of it, called Richard Wilhelm. And he became a friend of Jung's. And Jung initially thought, well, this is a load of nonsense. You know, how can it possibly be? You throw these sticks on the ground or you toss a few coins and it supposedly shows you where you're at on an unconscious level. And he'd set out to disprove it in the best tradition of the skeptic. And darn it, every time he tried to disprove it, the thing was like holding up a mirror to him. And he had this uncanny ability to show him exactly what was going on in his life at that moment. So he ended up writing the foreword for Wilhelm's translation.
Right.
And Jung's whole notion of synchronicity, which is now something we almost take for granted, it's in our collective psyche now, that idea of synchronicity came directly out of Jung's study of the I Ching, which was basically the Taoist philosophy that he was learning there.
Ian, I'm curious, you know, I know that you've done a lot of work with some other people like Carl Jung that you just mentioned, and Joseph Campbell, R.D. Lang, Milton Erickson, the hypnotherapist, Marianne Woodman, Arnold Mandel. And I'm curious, did you feel that you needed to study these other approaches to healing the psyche or soul of a human being because of some limitation that you found in homeopathy, or was it just because of your personal interests, or did you feel that you needed these other approaches, or I'm just curious.
It was a combination of the two for me. What I can see now, and I can only probably see this now, I couldn't have seen it 6 or 7 years ago, is that the same drive, you could say, that got me into homeopathy is exactly the same drive that has kind of taken me through it and into these other areas. And so for me, it's not been a kind of so much a conscious choice as just a natural continuation of what's always been my interest. And my primary interest, really, which I can articulate now, is to do with consciousness transformation. And that's what got me into homeopathy, was that interest. I saw homeopathy as a potential vehicle or tool for that. And it's when I first studied homeopathy, it opened my consciousness to a whole world of energy, energy healing, and so forth. But I realized that there were other facets to that that also interested me, like the dynamic that happens in the consulting room, for example, not just in the context of taking a case, just gathering information, but I noticed that there were certain times when I was with a client where something happened right there and then, even before I'd got as far as figuring out the remedy. You know, there was some shift happened or some healing possibility would come in. And I got interested in that. You could say I got more interested in that than I did about finding a remedy in many cases. And so that led me to study the people that knew something about that, you know, that knew about healing relationships and what constitutes an effective healing relationship, what gets in the way of it. And that led me primarily into the realm of psychology and other areas too.
Very interesting. Ian, I know that you and I have spoken in the past a little bit about the fact that a lot of people go and they study homeopathy, they go to these four-year programs or three- or two-year programs, whatever they are, and then they leave the school, and a very large number of them don't practice. And I know you had some thoughts about this. Can you share a little bit about what you think is actually going on here?
Yeah. There is the thing we've touched on already, which is regards to finding our own way. That's essential. And that's something that we don't all do, is we have to outgrow the teaching at some point and make it our own. And that's, I think, is one reason, this one place where we can get stuck is we're stuck with what we've inherited, if you like. And at some point that becomes a limitation or an obstacle we have to overcome. But I think just as importantly, I've learned to respect the fact that for a lot of people, homeopathy is, it's a stepping stone on their journey, on their self-healing journey. But it's not the whole journey. This has been the case in my journey. You know, it's when I got into homeopathy, I thought I'd found the only thing I'd be studying for the rest of my life. And it certainly seemed true at the time. And then I found it had opened doors to me which I wanted to go through, and I wanted to see what else was beyond the bounds of homeopathy. So I think that we shouldn't necessarily see it as a failure that someone who studied homeopathy hasn't gone into practice. Maybe they took what they needed from it at that time, and right now their need is to develop or grow in another way. And some people can really, you know, I've seen a lot of people beating themselves up because they're not practicing, but actually their interest is pulling them in a different direction. And if they allow themselves to follow that, they may or may not come back and incorporate homeopathy, but at least they're following their bliss, you know. But in other cases, suppose someone really wants to practice, but they're finding it a struggle. Oftentimes, I would say most times, that what I've found when I've worked with this, which I have a lot, the problem usually has got nothing to do with homeopathy per se. Maybe this person has difficulty marketing themselves. You know, it could be as simple as that. Or they're afraid to stand up and talk about what they do because they, you know, if they think someone's going to ask them a question that they can't answer. Some people get stuck with those issues. Some people are very uncomfortable with being paid for doing healing work. It's okay when they're giving it away, but then suddenly, as we mentioned earlier, the implications of doing it professionally seem to weigh heavily. Another one person might have a fear of failure or a fear of success. What that might mean, maybe they'd have to give up their day job in order to really make a go of it, and this is just too scary, it feels like too big a leap. So there's a lot of reasons potentially that I've found that you know, the person may have a desire to practice but it doesn't happen. And the key thing is just to make it conscious, is to find out what is it on the inside that's blocking, rather than usually the temptation is to go and do more on the outside, you know, do more seminars, do more training, do postgrad, post-postgrad, and so on and so on. And oftentimes that's not it. It's something on the inside that has to be kind of opened up and looked at. What's the inner obstacles? And as I said, I found that most of them have got nothing whatsoever to do with homeopathy.
Ian, I know that I've read recently that there have been some attacks, I believe, in the press in England, in the media in England, against homeopathy. And you can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I
no, that's true.
It's true, yeah. So I wanted to ask you about what you thought the future of homeopathy was, and I thought perhaps you could address some of these more recent attacks that have been going on in Britain.
Homeopathy does seem exceptionally good at attracting negative publicity. I don't know whether that's particularly in the UK, perhaps not, but it's certainly here in the last few years that's been the case. But I think, I mean, looking in the future now, I'd say it's mixed. I travel a fair bit, so I get to see things from not just the local perspective. I can, you know, I can see what it's like in other places, but I can also see what the common threads are. And I, one of the things that occurs to me is that there's a kind of identity crisis almost going on within homeopathy. On the one hand, there is this growing sort of push for homeopathy to become more accepted, as I've said, more institutionalized in a way. There's a strong drive here to have it be part of the mainstream, to be incorporated into the health service and so forth. And in order for that to happen, it has to be standardized. You know, the training has to be standardized. There's a certain number of hours have to be done and a certain number of topics have to be covered in a certain way and so on and so on. And I'm not sure whether the benefits this brings will outweigh the potential price that has to be paid. Another thing I notice now is that while a few colleges are booming, many others are really struggling in recent years. They're struggling to recruit enough students to remain viable, and they don't really know why. That's a relatively new phenomena.
Are you finding this all over the world, or specifically just in England, Ian?
No, it's not just in England. It's been in other places too, but I'm more aware of it here probably because I'm more in touch with what's happening here, but I've picked up similar things elsewhere. I don't know how it is in the US or Canada as yet. But it's, as I say, it's not all the schools, but many of the ones who've done well, you know, for a number of years, suddenly they find they've only got half the students they had. And they don't really know why. You know, it's like, what's changed? We're doing the same thing. What's changed out there? And of course, I'm interested in what's happening on the hidden level, so I kind of pay attention to this. And my feeling is part of that is that a lot of the middle ground, you could say, between medical practice and, if we put that on one end of a spectrum, and let's say psychotherapy on the other end, there's a middle ground which is to do with personal growth, self-development, which is a booming field. And it's been taken up largely by disciplines like life coaching, NLP. These kind of things are booming. And I would say this is an area where homeopathy could and should be expanding, but it doesn't seem to be doing so very effectively. Homeopathy is, as well as being a medical system, it's a great tool to support personal growth and self-healing. But for the most part, it's been presenting itself as an alternative medicine. And I think there's something of a problem here, there's something of a conflict, and that's partly why it seems to bring the hostility from the orthodox medical profession, is because, you know, they kind of claim the territory called medicine, and they don't like anything like homeopathy imposing on that territory, probably understandably. And I can't help thinking if homeopathy were just to present itself differently, a lot of this conflict could be avoided. There's another thing, though, which I think is important, which is that homeopathy is, in a way, it's developed into an expert system at a time when we're collectively outgrowing the need for experts to tell us what to do. If you look at the growth that's taking place in other self-healing modalities, for example, things like Reiki or emotional freedom technique, or even flower essences even. These techniques in a very short time have outstripped homeopathy in popularity in many parts of the world. You know, there's tens if not hundreds of thousands of people are using these techniques on a regular basis. Not because they're inherently more effective than homeopathy, but because they're more user-friendly. They're more accessible. They're easy to pick up and learn. And they're very suitable for self-administration. And I think one of the things that the internet is enabling is for people to be their own expert in ways that was previously not possible. And somewhere, homeopathy needs to find a way to be able to support people in doing just that. And my feeling is if it remains primarily as a kind of elite, you know, almost like an elite science that's exclusively practiced by highly trained specialists, then it stays as a kind of secret knowledge, and I would say that's dangerous at the moment for the future of homeopathy. We have to find increasingly, we have to find ways to make it accessible, user-friendly, and to be able to give it away so that people can be really empowered to use it themselves as they are these other things. Those are my thoughts.
Very interesting. Well, Ian, I have a million more questions that I'd love to ask you, but I see that we're running short on time, and I'd like to give other people an opportunity to ask you some questions. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines.
Okay, let's hope there's still somebody there.
Thank you so much for doing a wonderful job and sharing with us some very interesting ideas. It's greatly appreciated. For those of you, before I unmute the lines, let me just remind you that Ian Watson is the author of three different books and also many different seminars on different subjects relative to homeopathy. So if you want more information on any of those materials, you can call toll-free 866-599-5950. That's 866-599-5950. Or you can just go to Whole Health Now, W-H-O-L-E, Health, H-E-A-L-T-H-N-O-W, .com/books, and then you can just type in Ian Watson's name and you can see everything that he's produced. Ian, is there anything that you'd like to share with anybody in terms of, are you traveling anywhere that you'd like to let people know about, doing any seminars or anything that you'd like to inform people of?
Well, I'm coming to Canada very soon. I'm doing a seminar in Vancouver very much along this theme. So the Tao of Homeopathy and Running Successful Practice, two-day seminar in Vancouver right at the end of March, 31st of March, 1st of April. That's probably the most immediate thing
and
that might be of interest.
How could somebody contact, who would they contact to get more information about that?
They could have a look at my website. All the contact details are there. So if they go to ianwatsonseminars.com, and they'll see it right on the top of my seminar schedule.
Okay. Who's sponsoring that, Ian, just so...
It's just an individual, a woman called the name of Cantaris Hartley,
okay,
who's in Vancouver, and she's organizing it locally.
Okay, and do you know if she's going to the Vancouver Academy or anything like that? Or
I think so. I think she's a graduate or a recent graduate or something of the school there, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and unmute the line. Thank you again, Ian. It's greatly appreciated, and let me give other people an opportunity to ask some questions.
Okay.
The conference is now in talk mode.
Okay, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Hey, well, hey.
Any questions for Mr. Watson?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. This is Ian. This is Natalia. We exchanged a couple of emails. And if I asked you this question before, I do apologize, but I think it might be interesting for other people.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you very, very well.
Okay. Carolyn Mace, who is a theologian and a medical intuitive, stated many times that since homeopathy is a form of energy medicine, that in order for it to truly work, somebody's energy needs to be aligned in present time. In other words, there can't be any chunks scattered in different areas in the past, what
mm-hmm.
have you. And to some extent, it's not true, obviously, because if it were, then it would be very difficult for anybody to heal, such as for a remedy to help retrieve energy stuck in the past, whatever it may be, grief or anger or what have you. Or a lot of skeptics who say that, you know, it's just not going to work. And it wouldn't, but at the same time, it does bother me. So I was wondering if you could comment on this.
What is it about that bothers you?
Well, that she says that because it's a form of energy medicine, and truly, if it's not chemical medicine, where you, as a participant, don't have to believe that it's going to work or have all of your energy aligned in the present time. If it were a pill, like an allopathic medicine, you don't need to do anything. This is such a strong kind of boost. You know, it's chemical. It's kind of circumventing your volition, if you will. And you don't need to be a participant in that. But as it's a form of energy medicine, then if all of your energy is not pulled in present time, then, you know, it's not going to work. That's basically what she said.
Well, I think as you yourself have
the conference
out,
is now in silent mode.
There's a discrepancy here between a person's opinion and what has been our experience, because my experience and many other people who've used homeopathy has been that it works very well for people who are, shall we say, stuck in a certain place in time. You know, ailments from grief, ailments from bang on the head, whatever it is. This is an example where one way of explaining that is to say that person's energy is stuck in the past, and homeopathy helps to bring them back to the present. And they don't have to believe in it in order for it to work. We know that. It works beautifully for animals and youngsters without any belief. So, I think if I could bring in the Taoist perspective here, it would be that we have to individualize all these things. There might be one individual where it doesn't work, maybe for that reason, but to then make a general statement that says this won't work for anybody who's in this position, that's against the Tao. And to me, that's also against the spirit of homeopathy, which is that we individualize everything. And I think that there is this thing called timing. You know, when the time's right, the healing happens. And that's the bit that's out of our control, you could say. But from my perspective, that possibility certainly exists within homeopathy, that we can be a catalyst for a person's healing without the requirement for them to be, shall we say, energetically in the present moment.
The conference is now in talk mode.
I agree with what you say, Ian, but it's just fascinating to me that somebody in the field of energy medicine who is so prominent would keep saying that, and apparently she sees the energy field and she can trace what's happening and what the origin of illness is. So she probably doesn't just say that randomly. There's probably some sort of a point from which she originates in her opinion. So it's just,
Thank you very much for that question. It was an interesting one.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions that people would like to ask Mr. Watson?
I would like, this is Pam, and I've attended a number of Ian seminars, and I would just like to say that they're really quite remarkable and life-changing for a number of people. And I would encourage anyone who is interested in this topic to really make an effort to go to the seminars in person. It's very deep and rich experience, you know, and quite an expansion on the information we've gotten in this phone call.
Great. You have a question?
I want to thank you for that, Ian.
Well, thank you, Pam.
Ian, that you'd like to ask?
Pardon?
Do you have a question you'd like to ask, Ian?
No, I don't. I just wanted to comment.
Thank you very much for your comment. Any other questions for Ian?
I have a question. This is Star in San Diego. Applying the Tao to homeopathy as far as practice goes.
There's a terrible echo on it.
Yeah, I can't hear this one.
I can't hear anything.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you.
Okay. My question, going out in the real world, I understand with Taoism how it's our own internal struggle and what makes a practice work. But more in general terms, what could you give to practitioners that may be in that place of reexamining themselves and wanting to make an efficient practice and profitable in all ways? How do you represent when a client comes in? How do you explain yourself of the process and in terms of what's the expectation the client should have of the service through a Taoist point of view?
I don't think there's any fixed expectation that the client should have. One of the things that the Taoist perspective encourages is flexibility and fluidity, which means that you could practice in a particular way for one individual, but if the next person seems to have different needs, then you're fluid enough to be able to respond to what they need. And I, for me, one of the things that it's helpful is that it gives you permission, if you like, if you need that, to be able to practice in ways that are appropriate to the needs of your clients. It's not a kind of one size fits all. Having said that, I would say that the quickest way to build up a practice is to, in some respects, specialize on what you're interested in. Because if you're interested in it, that interest and that enthusiasm gets conveyed. So a lot of homeopaths try to be very general in the way that they, you know, would treat anybody who comes for anything. But there's nothing wrong with expressing your interest. If you're particularly interested in working with children or emotional difficulties or physical pathologies, say so. You know, that should be on your literature, and you can put that intention out. You know, the kinds of clients that I work with now are a very close match to the way I like to work. And the kinds of people that I used to get as clients 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago are nothing like the ones I get now. And I think it's worth making that conscious. Like, what would you like to work with? And be willing to let it change. So as you grow, your practice grows with you.
Fantastic. Ian, I see that we're out of time, unfortunately, because I'm sure that there are many more interesting questions that we could ask. But hopefully maybe you'll come back and do another one of these calls with us in the future.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay, don't mean to put you on the spot, but I know your calls are very much appreciated. So let me unmute the lines and let me let everybody thank you personally. I want to thank you very much, Ian. It was a great call, and again, I hope we can have you on again in the near future.
Thanks, Kim. It's my pleasure.